Nicole Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler on Air America Radio.
All right, we are back, and a movie opened nationally today called The Cove. It won massive awards at film festivals, including Sundance, for good reason. It is a fascinating film that has this bit of mystery and intrigue, in addition to sending a really important message. Joining me is Rick O'Berry. Rick O'Berry trained the dolphins that were that played Flipper on the TV show. He was instrumental in bringing dolphins to the place of popularity they are now, and now he's trying to undo that. I got to say, I watched the movie The Cove, and it broke my heart. And I guess maybe that's the effect you wanted to go for in telling the story of what happens to these dolphins.
I'm not the filmmaker. I have nothing to do with the editing process or the writing. That's just a different group of people. I'm being interviewed and followed around with cameras, and so it's really their story.
Well, it's your story. They put it together and made an amazing film out of it. But you were the impetus behind it. You knew something really nefarious was going on. You have a relationship with these animals, and you, based on your experience with them, you want the world to know what you know. And to that end, you certainly accomplished it in conjunction with the filmmakers.
Well, I hope people see dolphins differently, especially captive dolphins, when they see this movie. And then they'll be able to make an intelligent decision as to whether they want to buy a ticket for a captive dolphin show or swim program.
Mm-hmm.
We've never had that before. We've never had that level playing field, because for so many years, that industry, it's a multi-billion-dollar industry, has pumped out this propaganda, and most people think that dolphins actually belong inside of these concrete tanks doing silly tricks for us, or in a cage for a swim program, and they just don't see the problem, and so it's another way of looking at dolphins. Once you see The Cove, I think you'll see dolphins differently. I hope so.
Right. Well, I was conflicted going into it. I'm a scuba diver, and I think it is the most amazing experience that anyone could ever have. And I have to admit that I have in the past participated in swim with dolphin programs. Most recently, I'm down here in South Florida where you are. We took my daughter there at the Miami Seaquarium for the swim to experience this. And, I mean, she loved it. Now, all right, we'll start here then.
Okay.
A place like the Miami Seaquarium or SeaWorld that purports to do research and medical facilities and stuff, that's not really the case?
Well, I mean, as long as you use the words research and education, you can get away with murder.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what does that mean, research? You contemplating your navel can be research if you want it to be. And so we have been doing this so-called research with captive dolphins since 1938, when this industry started in Florida at Marine Studios in St. Augustine. And we have learned, or should have learned, that we're talking about a sonic creature whose primary sense is sound, and are very social animals and travel 40 miles throughout the day doing lots of things. And we put them into a concrete box so tourists can swim with them and call it research and education. And, if you're buying dolphins, you've seen the movie. If you are buying dolphins from the Japanese dolphin hunters, you are rewarding them for their bad behavior. The Miami Seaquarium bought dolphins from them. So did SeaWorld, the Indianapolis Zoo, the U.S. Navy, and Dolphin Encounters in Tahiti, Jay Sweeney's operation.
Wow.
And people don't know that. People who go to these places don't know. They ask all the wrong questions. They ask, what's the dolphin's name, or how, what do they eat? They don't ever ask, where did they come from, and how long will they be here?
Right. Well,
when you walked away from that experience, you had a great experience.
Mm-hmm.
Walked away from it. There's somebody right behind. There's an endless stream of people. Not like it's all over now and the dolphin can finally get on with its life. Their job for the rest of their life, and they're born into this at the Seaquarium, in that's a concrete tank. and they'll be there for the rest of their life, and their job is to amuse an endless stream of people, one after the next. There is no end to the line.
Right. No, you're right. And we did ask. I mean, they talk about how, you know, most of those dolphins were there for their whole lives. I mean, they make it sound beautiful, and they were born there, and, you know, they take such great care of them. But, yeah, we didn't realize that, wait a minute, this is not their natural habitat. And much like I've learned what they do to the elephants in the circus and what an abomination that is, I am now, especially after seeing The Cove, realizing that that's exactly what they're doing to the dolphins, except it's even more heinous in many ways because the dolphin is such an incredibly intelligent creature.
And their primary sense is sonar, sound. Our primary sense is light. We're visually oriented.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they treat them as best they can under, I mean, by our terms, but poorly indeed by theirs. Let's take your daughter, for example. She probably has a very nice room. But if she had to stay in her room for the rest of her life and you gave her great food, and but she could never leave that space, and now we're going to have, now we're, in addition to that, we're going to have an endless stream of tourists every hour coming in here for the rest of her life, and she's going to have to amuse them.
Right. She's going to have to come out and put on a show for them.
Exactly. Yeah. For her food. In other words, we're going to feed you three times a day. You're going to get great food. But you're going to have to perform for it. And that's what they do. Everything a dolphin does, when you're in the water with them doing those swim programs, when they are kissing you, they're not really kissing you at all. It's an optical illusion.
Mm-hmm.
They are doing something called targeting. And they learn that by the first trick you teach a dolphin is to touch a styrofoam ball, which is on the end of a stick. And once they have done that, and you blow a whistle and they understand, yes, you did that right, you have them.
That we're speaking with Rick O'Berry, who is featured in the film The Cove. More coming up in just a moment. Nicole Sandler on Air America. We'll be right back.
Nicole Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler on Air America Radio. Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler.
All right, we are back with Rick O'Berry, who, well, he didn't produce the movie The Cove, but he is featured in it. He was the impetus behind it because, well, he realized that the role he played in the rise in popularity of dolphins and these dolphin exhibits at water parks around the world. And now he's trying to, I guess, make it up to these creatures. So before we got cut off because of the clock, he was explaining how these dolphins are trained to do the tricks we see them do at SeaWorld and places like that.
When you're in the water with them doing those swim programs, when they are kissing you, they're not really kissing you at all. It's an optical illusion.
Mm-hmm.
They are doing something called targeting. And they learn that by the first trick you teach a dolphin is to touch a styrofoam ball, which is on the end of a stick. And once they have done that, and you blow a whistle and they understand, yes, you did that right, you have them. Now you can replace that styrofoam ball with your feet, and that's how dolphins are pushing the trainer through the water during a show. Or they come up and they touch or tap or target your cheek, and it looks like they're kissing you. And we take a photograph of that, and you take that home, and everybody talks about the great time they had. But it's all an illusion, and that's why I walked away from it. That place you were at, the Seaquarium, and there's a house there where the flipper set was.
Right.
That's the actual location, and I lived in that house for 7 years. That was my home. And Flipper was in the lake right in front. In those days, it wasn't concrete. Today, it's concrete. It was a tide pool, we call it. And I would take the television set out the front door of that little cottage, down to the end of that dock, and at 7:30 on Friday night, Flipper would watch Flipper on television. And I knew then that they were self-aware, and they didn't belong in captivity.
So that's when you started realizing that maybe what you were doing wasn't ethical, wasn't the right thing to do.
Yeah, and I actually captured those five dolphins from Biscayne Bay, which is right over the seawall there where you were, they had lives. You know, they had family, and they traveled throughout that day. 40 miles is about what the distance dolphins normally travel throughout the day, doing lots of different things. And we went out there with nets, and we separated mothers and babies and captured them and brought them into the seaquarium for that casual amusement. And the public never knew any of that. They just, it's an illusion. The whole thing's an optical illusion.
Right, and Rick O'Berry is with us. And, Rick, you were the trainer of the five dolphins who played Flipper. And over the course of those 7 years, you formed a very personal relationship with them. And you actually tell the story of how the main dolphin, Kathy was her name, actually committed suicide.
Yeah, exactly, at the Miami Seaquarium. And that was the day before Earth Day. That would have been April 21st. 1970.
And that did it for you. And after that, you became an activist working to expose what happens to these dolphins and to help free them and try to stop the practice.
Yeah, I've been running around the world ever since then trying to stop the traffic in captive dolphins and rescuing them from, you know, when people go through the seaquarium, some of them go home. And it's called the copycat syndrome. And they start their own dolphinarium, and they'll capture them, and they'll put them in a swimming pool. And I've been there to rescue dolphins from Guatemala, Nicaragua, Colombia, Haiti, Brazil. And I take them out into the jungle and build a natural sea pen and get them eating live fish again and release them back in the wild. And, you know, the people who were doing this were well-intended. They thought they were doing a wonderful thing. We're going to capture them and put them in this cage or a swimming pool. Most of them are swimming pools. And we're going to charge people $100 to swim with them, and we're going to call it education and research.
Right. Now, let's talk about the Cove and the story behind this. You, through your going around the world and trying to free dolphins, you caught wind of the fact that in a fishing village in Japan, Taiji, is it called?
Correct.
That they have an annual dolphin slaughter. That's where they capture these dolphins to sell them, as many as they can, to these marine parks. And those that can't are being slaughtered. Now, you knew this for a fact, even though it's so guarded, that area you can't get to, and that's part of the intrigue part of this, of the movie. Tell us how you found out what was going on there.
Well, I've heard about it for many years, and finally I went there and saw what goes on, and I was able to videotape the captures. I mean, you see dolphin trainers, as many as 30 of them, in the water, up to their waist, selecting the best for themselves to send to these swim programs so people can swim with them. Some of them are sold, and I know this for a fact because I had the contract for Ocean World, for example, in Dominican Republic. They were sold for $154 each.
$154,000, you mean?
Oh, 12 of them.
Wow.
They only get it, these fishermen, $500 for a dead dolphin. So it's clear to me that the captures and the traffic in live dolphins for swim programs is the economic underpinning of this mass slaughter that takes place every year from September through March. And so, if we could just get that industry, the Miami Seaquarium and SeaWorld and all of these places, to police their own industry and get the dolphin trainers out of Taiji, we might be able to shut this thing down. But they don't want to do that. They just want to go with, you know, denial, and we're not involved. We've never been involved. We're doing research and education, and, you know, but I think this movie's a game changer. People are now going to be able to see the truth for the first time.
Well, you see the capture of the live dolphins and the ones that are sent, sold for $150,000.
Yeah.
And that you were able to film, but then there was this secret cove area where you knew something truly evil was happening, that was so blocked off with barbed wire fences and that you couldn't get to, and that was under guard. And you and the filmmakers put together this team of experts of photography and underwater and everything, and were able to film the actual dolphin slaughter that had been so guarded for so long.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is when we saw that for the first time, the details of that, I thought, wow, this is, nobody's going to come see this movie. But, and so the challenge was for the editors and writers and filmmakers to turn all of that into something that is entertaining. And they did that, apparently, because every showing I've been to, and I've gone to Sundance and all the film festivals where it won, by the way, and it got a standing ovation at every showing it's ever had. And the reason is, it's entertaining. And you don't really see, you don't, your imagination sees the dolphins being, if you think back, you didn't actually see them being speared any more than you saw the woman in the bathtub in Psycho, in that Alfred Hitchcock movie, Janet Leigh. You never actually see her being stabbed. Your imagination does that.
Right. Yeah, but you, it's still enough to totally, I mean, I watched the movie 3 days ago, and it's still with me. It haunts me. And I mean, it would be bad enough if these were just, you know, harmless, dumb creatures. It would be bad enough. But yeah. Then you hear the stories, like the one, the surfer, who talked about that he was surfing, and there was this tiger shark coming right at him, and this dolphin just swam by and just rammed the shark right in the middle and drove him away from the surfer.
Yeah, and there's many, many stories like that, all the way back to the Greek era, 225 B.C., Plato and Pliny the Younger and Aristotle wrote about it. And so these stories are true. Well, that's something that's very special. If somebody saves the life of somebody else, that's, you know, we never heard of another wild animal coming out of the jungle and saving the life of a human. But these stories are quite common, dolphins and humans, and so, yeah. I don't think the fishermen in Taiji know that information. They really don't. And one of the reasons is the word, the character for whale in Japanese, kujira, is wrong in their language. It needs to be changed. It translates into large or monster fish.
Wow.
And they really think they're fish. But the dolphin trainers that you see in the water working side by side with the dolphin hunters, they know. They know that they're self-aware. They give them names. They look them in the eye every day and feed them. And yet, here they are in the water up to their waist, participating in what you saw in that movie. And the images don't lie. These are dolphin trainers. They're all part of the same industry. And I submit to you that that industry could stop this anytime they want to. But they don't spend a penny of the $2 billion they make every year. In the United States alone, it's $2 billion in profit. They have never been there. They're not other than to collect dolphins.
Mm.
They have no effort to stop it. And that's outrageous. When they say they do education and research, well, why don't you go to Taiji and start September 1st when the dolphin killing season starts?
And it's coming up really soon. So that
I'll be there. I will be there September 1st. And Ben Stiller said he's coming with me. He can get a lot of media attention. I can't because he's got a popular movie right now in Japan about museums or something.
Oh, the Night at the Museum. Well,
yeah.
Good, because and again, the movie, The Cove, opens nationally this weekend. So it'll be in theaters this weekend, and it's getting rave reviews. It won at Sundance. It will bring a lot of attention to the issue. And you're right. You don't see the killing, but it's graphic enough that you know what is happening to these dolphins.
Oh, yeah.
And it will break your heart. But I think it's something every adult should watch. There's no way I would have let my kids see this. Although I will explain to her why we won't be going back to SeaWorld and why, you know, the one experience she had swimming with the dolphins, I hope she remembers it and loves it, because that's it. It's not happening again.
Good for you. You are my kind of woman.
So,
and if your listeners want to do something, they can go to Save Japan Dolphins, one word, savejapandolphins.org. All the information is there, and they can take action. And if enough people do that, the dolphin killing season, September 1st, won't begin in Japan.
Wow. Okay. And the thing is, just because you can't go to a place like SeaWorld or the Miami Seaquarium and swim with the dolphins, you can still observe them in their natural habitat. Scuba diving is a wonderful sport. It's the next best. To me, it's like meditation. You go into another world. But that's how they're meant to be observed. where they live, and you don't touch them unless, like you show in the movie, sometimes they come up to you. They'll come up and swim with you. But you let them do it. It's their world, and we have no right to take them out of it for our entertainment purposes.
Exactly.
Rick O'Berry, thank you for doing this, and the film was magnificent. Again, it is fascinating, it's exciting, it's suspenseful, at times difficult to watch, but I think everyone, every adult should see it so they know what's going on.
Well, thank you very much.
All right, Rick O'Berry, the movie The Cove opens nationally today. And I highly recommend it. Don't take the kids. This is not a feel-good movie. But, you know, it's not your typical documentary either, because it is. It's got this element of suspense and high drama. And as I said, it will break your heart, and it will make you look at dolphins a little bit differently. And if you really thought you would one day want to go swim with the dolphins, you still might want to do it, but you might want to do it the way I suggest, and learn how to go scuba diving and do it in their, on their turf. All right. I'm Nicole Sandler. We'll take a break, come back on the other side, and talk a little bit about health care. I was on a conference call yesterday with Senator Sherrod Brown of Ohio, and after questions from the Washington Post and, you know, lots of big media people, I got to ask a question, and I followed up with a couple more. So we'll come back with that in a moment. We'll be right back.
Nicole Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler.
Give us a call at 866-303-2270.
So she tells him she must go out for the evening. To comfort.
Sandler. You're listening to Nicole Sandler on Air America Radio.
So, yesterday I participated in this conference call put on by the Campaign for America's Future with Senator Sherrod Brown from Ohio, along with a healthcare expert named Jacob Hacker. And all kinds of, you know, big-time reporters were on there asking their questions, and I got in the queue, and sure enough, they called on me. Well, earlier during the conference call, somebody I can't remember from where, asked Senator Brown if he would vote against any health care bill that did not contain a public option. And he said something like, well, I'm not going to get into hypotheticals or, you know, talk about how I'm going to vote. And that didn't sit well with me. So then they called on me.
We'll take the next question from Air America, Nicole Sandler.
Hi. If 57 members of the House Progressive Caucus signed a letter pledging to vote against any bill that does not contain a robust public option, I know you said that you won't get into what you will or won't vote against, but I wonder why. I mean, that is the only thing that's going to give us an even a hint of real health care reform.
I've spoken 15 times to the caucus and to Harry Reid specifically about the importance of the public option. We've organized all kinds of people in the Senate Democratic Caucus to do that. I speak for nobody else but myself, but I very much want this as part of it. I don't think you have a really good health care bill without it. I'm just unwilling to say that if it's not in it, I absolutely vote against the plan, because I don't know what else might be in its place. If it's a co-op instead of a public option, and it doesn't have, and the subsidies are too low for low-income people to get health care, if we have the employer mandate's too weak or the individual mandate's too and that is inadequate, of course I'd vote no, but I'd need to see all that. I apologize for not being more direct, but that's as direct as I think I can be.
Okay, and one follow-up is that on the House, on the floor of the House, they're going to have a debate and a vote on single-payer. Yet Max Baucus wouldn't even allow the single-payer advocates a seat at the table to even discuss what single-payer is. We've all heard how well Medicare works and all the seniors love Medicare. This would be Medicare for all. Why has single-payer just been categorically just taken off the table in the Senate?
Well, you'd have to ask Max about his discussions and his negotiations. I'm obviously not pleased with the direction of those negotiations overall, but you'd have to ask him about that. You'd have to ask the president why the president is not supporting Medicare for all. We had a long discussion on it in the House, and I'm sorry, in the Senate Health Committee, and It was voted. I supported it. But it was voted down overwhelmingly in the Health Committee. It was a sort of a state by state pilot, kind of four state pilot project that Senator Sanders offered. Four of us voted for it. It was defeated overwhelmingly.
Well, your colleague in Ohio, Dennis Kucinich, got an amendment passed in his committee in the House that would allow states to have the option of enacting their own single-payer program in each state, which passed out of committee. Would you support that kind of amendment being in the final bill?
I supported an amendment not too different from that. I don't think there's much future for that in this political climate in this day for something like that to become law. I'm putting all of my efforts into writing a good bill out of the Senate, and a big part of those efforts will be focused on preserving the strong public option like we were able to write.
All right,
and
let
me just, this is Roger Hickey, let me just note that a couple of weeks ago, Senator Reid was quoted in one of his attempts to get Senator Baucus moving. He was quoted as saying that I can't pass out of the U.S. Senate a bill that doesn't have a good public option. And he was trying to encourage Senator Baucus not to compromise with Republicans on this question. So it's due to the leadership of people like Senator Brown who informs Senator Reid's judgment about this kind of thing. So there's going to be a big effort after the two bills are produced to make sure that a strong public plan is in the final Senate version.
Well, that was nice to hear, right? So that from that press conference from yesterday. Now, after the conference call from yesterday with the group Campaign for America's Future and Senator Sherrod Brown. So last night, after participating in that during the day, but before the show last night, I spoke at the Democracy for America Miami monthly meeting about health care reform. And today they had a protest in Miami in front of Congressman Mario Diaz-Balart's office. Did so without any violence, by the way. We'll speak with the president of DFA Miami when we return about what happened today and more. We'll be right back.
Nicole Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler.